This morning's scripture will be from Job, chapter 2, verses 7 through 9. It'll be Job, chapter 2, verses 7 through 9. So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and struck Job with loathsome sores from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. And he took a piece of broken pottery with which to scrape himself while he sat in the ashes. And his wife said to him, "Do you still hold fast to your integrity? Curse God and die."
Good morning, everybody. It's good to be up here before you. It's sad, the occasion, because Brother Gary's out of town attending a funeral. But I wanted to take the opportunity, because of the circumstances, to answer a question that I have been thinking about, something that has been on my mind, not Star Wars, something that has been on my mind somewhat frequently in the recent days. I'll look at a comic. Peanuts. Everybody's heard of Peanuts. Okay, so we have Lucy here. She says, "Sometimes I get discouraged." Charlie Brown, the faithful friend, says, "Well, Lucy, life does have its ups and downs, you know. But why? Why should it? Why can't my life be all ups? If I want all ups, why can't I have them? Why can't I just move from one up to another up? Why can't I just go from an up to an upper up? I don't want downs, I just want ups. And ups, and ups, and ups." Charlie Brown just can't stand it. Perhaps we've all felt like Lucy before. We've all thought similarly to her, but we know that that is just not how life works, is it? Life stinks sometimes. Life is terrible. But life can also be beautiful. Life can be wonderful beyond anything we could ever deserve. That's how life is. There's ups and downs. Life is filled with pain and discouragement. We all know that. The reason why Brother Gary is not here is because a young wife and mother of three passed away unexpectedly. And he is good friends of that family, and he wanted to attend the funeral. So the question that I have on my mind is one which Andy Stanley, in his book Deep and Wide, it's kind of a terrible book, but also has some really good stuff in it. I'd recommend skipping the first part if you want to read it. I can explain more about that. I'll be referencing that some this morning. But the question is, how can we remain faithful through the good times and the bad? How can we remain faithful through the good times and the bad? Is it possible for me to be faithful no matter what? Faithful no matter what? Can I be prepared and stand no matter what life throws my way? Life can weaken our faith or it can strengthen it. Life can weaken our faith or it can strengthen it. There are defining moments that happen in every one of our lives that come to us unexpectedly, and they can greatly affect our faith one way or the other. These defining moments can involve pain and discouragement, disappointment. It could be the death of a friend or family member. It could be divorce. It could be separation from a loved one. It could be severe illness or financial difficulties. It could be betrayal by a friend. I remember when my parents divorced as a young child, my family walked away from God for years because of that. Some of us still haven't returned, unfortunately. A good friend of mine was walking home from school. He was going to Full Sail, and he was walking home one night after class, and he was mugged. He could have been killed. He walked away from God. He blamed God for that, and he never really came back. On the other hand, it isn't uncommon for the death of a family member to remind us of the brevity of life, and for families to pull together and to once again be faithful when they otherwise would not be. So the bad things can cut either way. They can cause us to lose faith, or they cause us to have more faith. A friend of mine found himself in jail. I know a lot of friends who've gotten into a lot of trouble. But he used that opportunity to obey the gospel. He used that opportunity to study and to change his life and to turn around, and he's still faithful to this day. Obviously, negative events can weaken our faith or strengthen it. But have you realized, brothers and sisters, that positive events can do the exact same thing? A promotion at work is not uncommon for a man or woman to get a promotion at work, and then all of a sudden they find they have no more time for God. What should be a blessing, something that's really, really good, that God can give to us, we can use it in a way that draws us away from God. Getting a scholarship moving to a new location, beginning a relationship. Any of these things can weaken our faith or strengthen it. Many young folks have been built up and encouraged because of a godly new boyfriend or girlfriend. On the other hand, many have been drawn away from a godly, ungodly boyfriend or girlfriend that they hope to change, but that's another story. Many people, like I said, have received a promotion at work, and they just don't have time for God anymore. Or they have a new child born, and they don't have time for God anymore. Or they have a new toy, and they don't have time for God anymore. I got lucky in that when I moved away from home to go to college, I met Jeanette, I met the wonderful people here, and that increased my faith greatly. I don't really credit myself with much of that, but I was surrounded by people who cared enough to make sure that happened. On the other hand, though, I have allowed small successes in my life to distract me from serving God for a while. It can happen. Another friend of mine moved and found some success, and he took that as an opportunity, similarly, to walk away from God. These things can happen. If we look at the Bible and the Old Testament, just what we've been studying for the past 3 years, almost every single time the children of Israel got even the smallest amount of success, what happens? They walk away from God. They're like, oh, we're doing fine. Now we don't need him. Let's do whatever we want. And then God punishes them, and then what do they remember? Oh, actually, yeah, we do need God. Let's go back to him. Let's give him another shot. We can use blessings for good or for bad, as well as the bad things for good or bad. In the New Testament, people were blessed greatly. They were brought back to life or healed of leprosy or other diseases. And they some of them use that as an opportunity to follow Christ. Others of them use it as an opportunity to just do their own thing. I can see now, I'm going to go my own way. I don't have leprosy. I'm going to go do whatever I want. That's the kind of thing that can happen. The tricky thing is that we're notoriously bad at gauging how well we're going to respond to a situation until we're in the midst of it. And by then, sometimes it's too late. Do you remember the apostles the night before Jesus was betrayed? Every single one of them said what? First it was Peter, but eventually every single one of them said, yeah. We will never betray you, Jesus. Even if we have to die, we will never leave you. There's nothing that can separate us from you. And then a little bit of difficulty comes in every single one of them. They walk away from God, at least for a time. We are notoriously bad at gauging our own abilities to remain faithful, unfortunately. So since these good things and bad things will happen to all of us, life isn't just a series of ups and upper ups, like Lucy said. There's ups and downs. The question again that has been on my mind is, how can we remain faithful throughout the bad times and the good? This is the one thing that I want us to leave here this morning knowing. How can we do this? It's vitally important because they're going to come. They're going to come no matter what you think, no matter how hard you try. They're going to come, and we need to be ready. I want to suggest to you that there's two things. There's two things that separate and makes a difference between people who remain faithful throughout the good times and bad and people who don't. It's our perspective and it's our partners. Our perspective and our partners. Our perspective is simply how we see things. How we view things. Two people can look at the exact same thing and have completely different conclusions about that thing, right? That can happen. There's a lot of different things we each bring to any given situation, but our perspective is simply the way we view things. One example, Steve Jobs. When he was a 13-year-old boy, in his biography, he told of the moment that he walked away from God. It's when he saw this magazine cover. It's a Life magazine cover. On it, there are children in Africa caught in a war-torn region of Nigeria. So from his biography, it says, Steve took it, the magazine, to Sunday school and confronted the church's pastor. If I raise my finger, will God know which one I'm going to raise even before I do it? The pastor answered, yes. God knows everything. Jobs then pulled out this cover and asked, well, does God know about this and what's going to happen to those children? Steve never went back to church. It wasn't because of that picture, though. You might say it was because of that picture. It was because of his perspective on that picture. It was because of his perspective. And his mind, hungry children in Africa and a loving God, those two things were irreconcilable. Those two things couldn't fit together in the same reality. He knew this was happening, so therefore this other thing, God, couldn't be. Stanley, in his book, uses his own children as an example. His three young kids, when they were about Jobs' age, they went to Africa, the Mathari Valley slum in particular. No electricity, no running water, over 500,000 people crammed into a tiny, tiny area. They live in shanties made of rusting tin and mud, and it's disgusting. to put it mildly. 1 in 3 adults have AIDS, and they die before their children are born, and it's not uncommon for 6, 7, 8-year-olds to be the head of the household, taking care of the younger siblings. Poverty unimaginable. Stanley's children saw this same injustice. They walked down the streets of Islam. They saw injustice and misery, the same kind that drove Steve Jobs away, but they didn't lose faith. On the contrary, they were strengthened. They left that place motivated and grateful. They knew that God hated it as much, or more likely, even more than they did. They knew that God was disgusted by that injustice and that misery and poverty even more than they were. And they were grateful that they didn't have to live that way. And they were grateful that God gave them and put them in a position to do something about it. They're motivated to help. Same situation, different perspective equals a different outcome. If someone is convinced that every good and perfect gift comes from God, that everything belongs to God, and we're simply managers, then we, when good things happen, those good things won't be distractions to our faith. So here's the two different perspectives. The biblical perspective, first of all. Every good gift is from God. I'm just a manager. Everything that I have from God, whether I have anything or not, is from God. It's not something I deserve or I earned. So when something good happens to me, I win a bunch of money, or I get a lottery, or not lottery, I get a promotion, or whatever the good thing is. It's not going to distract me from God, because I'm just going to use those things to further serve God. That's my perspective. And if God takes those things away, it was God's to give and God's to take away. What I have left, I'll use to serve God. If bad things happen to us and we have a biblical perspective, we're going to know that God loves us and uses bad things to make us stronger. He doesn't love us any less when bad things happen to us. That means He does love us and He wants us to be stronger. We're not discouraged by bad things happening. We're expecting them and we're counting on them. On the other hand, the worldly perspective is, I'm self-sufficient. This is what the Israelites thought every single time almost things started going well for them. I don't really need God. We're doing it ourselves. All of our success is because of ourselves. So when good things happened, when they had success, they didn't need God anymore. They let it distract them. Worldly perspective is, if a loving God was really there, He wouldn't allow bad things to happen to me. He would not allow bad things to happen to me. So when bad things happen to me, God doesn't love me. God doesn't exist. I hate God. I'm going to walk away from Him. Exact same things happening to everybody, to different degrees, but different outcomes are based on the different perspectives. Listen to the words of our brother Paul in Philippians chapter 1. If you'd like to turn there, Philippians chapter 1 and verse 12. Paul here perfectly describes the biblical perspective that we all ought to have. I want you to know, brethren, that the things which happened to me, what happened to him? Shipwrecked, starving, almost murdered time and time again, jailed, beaten. The things which happened to me have actually turned out for the furtherance of the gospel. How amazing is that? Is it easy to have that perspective? No. God knows. It isn't easy. But if we're going to become mature Christians, if we're going to be faithful throughout the good times and the bad, that ought to be our perspective, no matter what. That ought to be our perspective. The things that happened to me, good or bad, God's word was preached. God's word was preached. He was not only able to survive the trials with his faith intact, but he was able to grow in faith and help others grow as well. His perspective allowed him to see the bigger picture. That's what it means to have perspective. If this book is in front of my eyes and all I can see is red, I don't have very good perspective. But if I remove the book from my face, I can see a lot more. I can see the bigger picture. And this book doesn't matter as much to me, because that's not all I can see. Perspective is being able to see the bigger picture. He can see what was happening beyond his own suffering. The gospel was being preached in ways that it otherwise never could have been. Because he was jailed, he knew that God still loved him, even though he went through so many lows in his life. Because Paul was jailed, that gave other people the courage to say, hey, what's the worst that can happen? Paul was jailed, and he's still surviving. Let's go preach the gospel. And that's exactly what happened. He was able to see the good in spite of the bad. Life will never drive us away from God, but our perspectives on life certainly can. Life will never drive us away from God, or to God, for that matter. Our perspective on life certainly can. Number two, our partners. Our partners. I like this image. Because that's who our partners our friends, our family members, our coworkers, our teachers, our mentors, that's how they should be to us in our lives. Two peas in a pod, three peas in a pod. Friends, fingers on the same hand. We're all working together, right? Through the good times and the bad. The people we choose to surround us in our lives will have an equally great impact on determining whether we're faithful in these moments or not. Ecclesiastes chapter 4 and verse 10 says, "Woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him up." And verses on continue about the importance, Ecclesiastes 4:10, the importance of having people around us who can help us when we can't get the perspective on our own. When things are so bad, when things are so low that we can't look up for long enough to see the perspective, we need someone around us to say, "Hey, look up." If times get so tough that we're unable to see it on our own, we need people not like Job's wife that Vincent just told us about. We do not need people like her. "Oh, look, all this bad stuff happened to you." "Yeah. Curse God and die." Is that the answer? It's an answer, but it's not a good answer. We don't need people like that in our lives. We need people who will say, I'm sorry you're sad. I'm weeping with you. How can I help you through this?" Weep with those who weep. Rejoice with those who rejoice. We need someone who can help us bear our burdens and cry with us when we need that. Or when things are going good, we need someone who will keep us grounded and say, "Hey, you're not that big of a shot. Okay, keep your feet on the ground." We need people who will speak to us reality when we're especially blessed. Here's another Peanuts comic. I don't know why there's so many Peanuts comics, but these kids are great. So, Lucy here again. "Phooey," she says, and her little brother Linus, I think it's Linus, he says, "What's the matter?" And Lucy says, "My life is a drag. I'm completely fed up. I've never felt so low in my life." And her little brother says, "When you're in such a, when you're mood like this, you should try to think of things you have to be thankful for. In other words, count your blessings." I hope you have a friend like that. "Ha, that's a good one. I could count my blessings on one finger." I'm sure we all know someone like that. I never had anything, and I never will have anything. I don't get half the breaks that other people do. Nothing ever goes right for me." Brothers and sisters, this better not be us. At least it better not be us for very long. It's okay to have our moments. We all have our moments. But God forbid this is us for more than a little while. But it is from time to time. And you talk about counting blessings. You talk about being thankful. "What do I have to be thankful for?" And he responds, "Well, for one thing, you have a little brother that loves you." And she can't help but just cry. He says, "Every now and then I say the right thing." We need people in our lives who can be our Linus to our Lucy, right? When we're Lucy, we need a Linus. When our faith is down for the count, we need people who will speak truth to us. Friends who will remind us of God's past faithfulness. We need people who will draw our attention outside the realm of our immediate circumstances. People to put our circumstances in their proper context. Perhaps the best New Testament example of this dynamic revolves around John the Baptist's arrest and incarceration. John, commissioned by God to announce the arrival of the Messiah, suddenly finds himself in jail with no prospect of release. Do you remember all the other times when faithful brothers were in jail? What happened? Angels would come and release them, an earthquake would happen, and God would let them out, and they would be rescued. But did that happen with John? There was no angelic visit. There was no earthquake. There was no miracle. He just sat in Herod's dungeon. He didn't even receive a care package from his famous cousin. Just the stench of Herod's dungeon. Consequently, his faith took a big hit. He began to doubt. So he sent a message to Jesus through his friends. You remember when John baptized Christ? John had no doubt who he was. "This man's sandals, I'm not even worthy to loose. I can't baptize you. You need to baptize me." John didn't have any doubts then, but after a little while in the dungeon, it can cause us to think, right? And when we find ourselves in life's dungeon, and it stinks, and there's no one coming to rescue us, our faith can take a big hit, just like John. So John sent friends to ask, "Are you the one? Are you the one? Are you still the one who is to come, or should we expect someone else? Are you who I thought you were, Or was I mistaken? In other words, John is saying, this isn't making any sense. Interpret this, please, for me. Jesus responded, Matthew 11, verse 3, by drawing John's attention. He was Linus here. He drew John's attention away from his immediate circumstances to God's broader activity in the world. He said, notice this, Jesus didn't say, yes, John, don't worry about it. It's me. I'm him. You're going to be okay. Your faith is going to be strong. Jesus didn't say that. He didn't say anything like that. He said to his friends, tell John what's going on. Go back and report to John what you hear and see. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is proclaimed to the poor. In other words, tell John what's going on outside of his misery. Tell him not to lose faith. Tell him not to get swallowed up in his immediate surroundings. Point him to the broader context. Doing so will help him rightly interpret what's happening to him. We all need that in times when things get tough. So it is with us. When we're down and when we're unable to see for ourselves, we need friends around us who can help us see it through. We need sometimes for other people to be our eyes. So what do we do then? We realize the importance of a biblical perspective of trials and blessings. We realize the importance of surrounding ourselves with godly people. But what do we do differently once we leave here this morning? When difficulties or blessings come our way, when we do these two things, we'll be able to see the opportunity that God is giving to us. Let's not be all wrapped up in ourselves, but let's be tools in God's hands. There's no event that can happen to us or has happened to us that God can't use for good. Romans chapter 8. Good or bad, he can use it for good if we allow him to. But what does that look like? Let's look at some examples. Some examples. I love examples. I know a family who once lost one of their loved ones who was a faithful member of the church. This death drew the family closer together. They were stronger than before. Instead of blaming God and running away from him, they redoubled their efforts to be faithful so that they could all see her again in heaven one day. Isn't that motivation? Yeah. They didn't blame God for taking her away from them. They thanked him for the opportunity that he gave to them, the opportunity for the time that they did have. They thanked him for that opportunity. They had perspective. And if any one of them momentarily lost perspective, they had one another to lean on to regain perspective. I know a man whose wife cheated on him and filed for divorce, leaving him and their kids as well. He turned this extremely difficult time into an opportunity by finding a nice Baptist lady and studying with her and converting her. And then he married her. Was that easy? No. To put it mildly, I don't know if that was his plan all along. I don't think it was. But he made the best of a very, very bad situation. God was glorified in the process. I know someone who was recently expecting some large financial expenses, but she ended up being blessed with not having to pay those. Now, she could have spent that money on herself on a vacation, shiny new toys or clothes or whatever else, but instead, she took that money and decided to give it to some missionaries. God had blessed her greatly. Why shouldn't she return the favor? Why shouldn't she be thankful in return? That blessing was an opportunity to be grateful toward God. She could have used that opportunity to indulge herself. Oh, hey, cool, I'm blessed. I have a lot of extra money. I'm going to buy myself a new TV or a car or whatever. But that wasn't the decision. I know a young man who was a new, somewhat lukewarm Christian. His classmates and family were not Christians, though. They would constantly challenge him on what he believed, and so he took this opportunity to study more so he could answer them about what the Bible teaches. He saw this as an opportunity to grow rather than as persecution and a reason to give up. Will people question our faith and be mean to us and hateful to us and encourage us to do the wrong thing? Yes. Can we see it as persecution? Yes. But do we have to give up because of that? Certainly not. Certainly not. A man was looking forward to his retirement, not as a time to sleep in more or go on vacations or anything like that, but as an opportunity to study more and to preach more and to evangelize more and to share God's word more. I hope these examples start to get you to think. They help me to think about what's the focus in life. When things go good, when things go poorly, what's the focus? We can use any of those things for God's glory. Can we be faithful to God no matter what? Yes. Yes, we can. If we want to. That's the only condition. If we want to, we can. We have all of the tools necessary to be faithful to God no matter what. It will not be easy. Make no mistake, I'm not saying that. But it is possible. How can we be faithful no matter what? Surrounding ourselves with the right people and having a proper perspective. This will definitely help. We need the guidance and encouragement, especially the perspective that the Bible gives us. It means we have to study it. We have to know it. It can't just be out here, not doing anything. We need the support of friends and family who will be there to pick us up when we're down. We can't wallow. We can't pity ourselves. There's a time to mourn. There's a time to be sad. But there's a time to get back up, brothers and sisters. There's a lot more that can be said, but won't. The lesson is yours. Now is our chance to apply. Now is our chance to apply. What do we do when we leave here this morning? Can we help you, friends? Can we help you become more faithful no matter what? If you're not a Christian, can we help you become a Christian so then you can be faithful no matter what? We're willing to, but you have to want to. If you like the prayers of the church or to study more what you need to do to be pleasing to God, won't you let us know? We're about to stand and sing a song so that we can encourage you to think about that and make that decision if such is the case. You have an opportunity right now. Won't you take it? Let's together stand and sing.